It's Wednesday morning, and you know what that means. It's time for another episode of the Alabama Slam podcast. I'm your host, Corey Hanna.
What's going on, guys? It's Patrick Akers.
And I subscribe to the Sheamus workout, too. Burger after burger after burger.
Love it. We'll get to WWE in the second half of the show, but I want to lead off with Dynasty from the weekend, where I had a note or two about Dynamite, and I didn't have anything for Collision because for whatever reason, Hulu did not record it for me, and I didn't have time to watch it on Sunday anyway. So I just tuned in Saturday night thinking I'd start it from the beginning, and it wasn't there. So I missed it. Anyhow, let's get into Dynasty, because this is what I really wanted to talk about. I've been itching to get on here and record ever since Sunday night. So we start off with what I thought was a hot match, and Patrick, I think, classified it as a banger via text yesterday, right, Patrick?
Yeah, there was a lot of bangers, and then great value bangers, and then things that was a couple things that were maybe not bangers, but we started off hot.
Yeah, coming in hot with Pac versus Okada. Okada picks up the win, retains the belt. You know, it's good to see Pac back in shape and they able to wrestle and be on a pay per view. I can't remember the last time he was on a pay-per-view.
It's been a minute, and he, this man has a level of body control that is almost unrivaled by kind of anyone that's ever been inside a wrestling ring. That spot he took with the DDT on the floor on the outside, the ability to just not break your neck and do that is just insane, and I think Okada is at his best when he's wrestling against someone who is a little bit smaller, a little bit quicker than him, because it really allows him to kind of showcase some of his power. You know, he's like a legit 6'3", 6'4". So Pac was the perfect opponent for him, and this is kind of the way I think Okada needs to be presented in AEW. He does not need to be wrestling random-ass jobbers on a Wednesday night. He needs to be, when this dude is in the ring, you're about to see something special, and he's going up against legit opponents. And the crowd, even though he is a heel, seemed to be at least 50-50 in his favor, if not a little bit more.
Define legit opponent.
Guys like Pac, who are at a level inside the ring, because even though Pac has been away from AEW for a minute, the fan base in AEW recognizes him as a dude who is a accomplished wrestler inside the ring. So I guess when I say legit, like, it doesn't need to be, for as much as I like Daniel Garcia, it doesn't need to be a guy like that. Okada needs to be wrestling Danielson, Moxley, Claudio, Pac, Penta, dudes who have some cachet, not only in AEW, but on a sort of an international kind of scale. Okay.
Because that's one of the things one of my biggest takeaways from this thing is everybody who is considered a star on this show had opponents that, you know, in theory are what you would consider a legit opponents, but they're not legit opponents as far as, you know, credible chance of winning opponents. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but this was the only, who else would you consider that on this card? Osprey Danielson kind of had it, but like Samoa Joe is legit. FTR and the Young Bucks could have went either way.
There was no way Samoa Joe was walking away with the title.
Yeah, but no one looks at Samoa Joe and is like, this is, he's a cakewalk. He doesn't mean anything. The dude's one of the founding fathers of American independent wrestling.
You also didn't have, with that one, there's the benefit of us all knowing that they were putting it on Swerve sooner than later.
But no, I mean, I am not taking away their wrestling ability. This card has some amazing wrestling talent on it. It's just there's, for a majority of it, you know who's going there because Samoa Joe had the advantage of being a champion. And I was shocked that he was a champion at the time he was a champion, but that ran its course because he was now one-on-one with the guys that he was made champion with because they hated each other too much to let the other one win. But the rest of them is, it's one of those things where it's like there's, you've got legit opponents who are credible wrestlers, but they don't have a credible chance of being winners in AEW. Pac will never be a winner in AEW.
Well, I mean, he was the first trios champion. He was the first double champ in the company.
Okay. The trios belt, which are now combined with a secondary trios belt,
yeah,
was a kickoff show with a 60-year-old man getting a majority of the shine in that match.
Bro, listen, Stevie, you just got a vibe. You got a vibe with the show, man. I think at some point it's just like, and I'm not saying that you're wrong. You like WWE and you like that style, and that's,
yeah,
it's great. Yeah, yeah.
I think I have no arguments on how this match was wrestled. I think that, agree. They put on there was a lot of cool wrestling moves. They did a lot of cool things. They did a lot of back and forth. You know, it was entertaining to watch. But what I've determined is I want to care about why. And I don't care about Pat being the first jobber to Okada in a pay-per-view match.
Okay. But even still, though, it is a type of style that I don't even think it's a type of style. I'll be frank with you. I don't think there are many people in WWE that can wrestle at the type of pace that a Pac Okada, and we'll talk about about Danielson Ospreay. Like, I don't think Seth Rollins could do that. I know Roman Reigns can't do it.
I would argue that Seth Rollins could. I'm not even going to try to argue with Roman Reigns. Ricochet most definitely could. Gunther most definitely could.
Cody,
Sammy, Kevin Owens.
Sammy. When we get into, let's jump forward because I want to talk about Ospreay Danielson because this is the star of the pay per view. Like, this is what the $50 is worth. A lot of people, when they come on these podcasts and do things like this, they tend to be reactionary after the moment. So I'm going to try to not do that. I seriously think Will Ospreay is the greatest wrestler that ever lived inside the ring. And I don't know if that's an exaggeration at this point. The pace and the physicality that this dude wrestles with, we've now seen it against, at least in AEW, we've seen it against Omega, we've seen it against Takeshita. Even in the random Dynamite match against Will Hobbs, especially in this match Sunday against Danielson.
The one note I had about Dynamite from last week was, hey, this was overall a pretty good show. I don't really have any notes. And then as Ospreay and Claudio was happening, I was like, hey, never mind. This one's a humper. I was like, this one rules.
Ospreay, Claudio, you go back and watch the three matches he had against Shingo in New Japan.
Him getting himself out of the damn Claudio spin.
This is what I want from wrestling. And I think this is where Steven and I, this is a stark difference in fundamentally how we enjoy wrestling. Because I think Steven, and he's not wrong, he enjoys it for the stories and he wants to care about it. But to me, I can get those stories by watching movies or reading books or reading TV shows. What I can't get from other mediums is what I saw with Danielson and Ospreay, which is two dudes. It's like a live action anime fight. And they're moving at a pace that I can tell you personally from being inside the ring. Wrestling that way, first of all, I didn't even come close to wrestling that kind of way. But wrestling at that kind of style with that kind of physicality, that kind of pace for 40 minutes or however long they went, you're talking about... This isn't even like generational talent. You're talking about there's like a handful of dudes ever in the history of wrestling that can give you that type of pace and that kind of physicality and give you that kind of match and give you the types of things where they're telling you a story inside the ring with the reversals and the way they get into sections and get out of it in kind of ways. Honest to God, like if you guys would have seen me here at the house watching this match, it's like everything Will Ospreay is everything I have ever wanted in a professional wrestler. And I know that was a long-winded thing, but like I think he is, honest to God, I think he's the greatest that ever lived. We are
calling it now.
I think we are watching, what we are watching right now from Will Ospreay is like if you would have seen Michael Jordan drop 60 points in the Garden against Larry Bird, and you're like, that dude is about to be on the cusp of like all-time great. I really do feel that way about this dude.
I saw a lot of, well, let me preface it by saying I thought it was funny because when it was done that night, I was going to bed and Jamie asked how it was. I was like, well, remember a couple months ago when I was like, Takeshita and Ospreay could be the match of the year? And I was like, it's a couple months later and we're only 4 months into this year. And I was like, this one is probably also a match of the year candidate. And I was like, it's good. It has that edge over the Takeshita match. But I was like, there are people on Twitter saying, like, it's the greatest match ever on American soil. There's a lot. Match of the year was trending. Lot of instant reactions to it, right? And I want to say this, too, is probably the best $50 that I've ever spent because I think I mentioned on here last week that Patrick, I don't think you've heard this story. I was texting with Steven about it. I said I was on the no spend challenge this month. You know, my wife and I were trying to cut out some extra spending that we do. We eat out a lot, like dinner, you know, it's like, hey, let's just go get some pizza. Let's go get some chicken, whatever. So I was like, well, I'm going to not buy the pay-per-view. I was like, Steven has a way that he watches it and I'm going to do that. So I got the link from Steven, you know, and I was like, is it real porny? He's like, no, I never had any issues.
None.
Steven, if you for audio component, if we're only an audio podcast, Steven has been struggling to breathe in the background for the last minute or two. So I log on. It's like, here's a stream. Click on it. Just a freeze frame. Nothing happening. I hit play. Opens up another window with like a sports betting thing. I was like, okay, figured this was going to happen. It's going to take a little while, right? Went through it a couple times, found it, tried other links, didn't work. So I texted him and I was like, hey, this link sucks with like a whole bunch of S's at the end, right? And then a couple minutes go by. He is like, well, you know, you get what you pay for. And and then a minute later, I go to open one, and there's like a man's butthole in my face.
Right on.
I was like, well, at least it wasn't being cast to the TV just yet. My wife and son to walk in with a man's balloon knot on the screen. So at that point, I kind of look at my wife, and I was like, well, I just saw a man's whole brown eye. I think I'm gonna just not be able to watch it. And she's like, just spend the money. I was like, but we're on the challenge, no spend challenge. She's like, just whatever. It's in PayPal. It's like it doesn't count. Just take it out of the PayPal.
That's girl mouth. Hell yeah.
And she was like, no big deal.
I didn't get to watch
this. $50 I ever spent.
I did not get to watch this one live. I went to a lecture down in Birmingham about serial killers. So I am sitting in the middle of an auditorium surrounded by people who are listening to people talking about, you know, murdering people left and right. And I get this text and I have never laughed so hard at the word b-hole in my life that I'm sitting there trying to tell my wife why I'm dying in the middle of this, you know, murder lecture. And to the point where I just couldn't, just had to hand the phone over and be like, this is what's killing me right now. I have never laughed so hard at b-hole. And because normally when I pull it up, it's, you know, the sports bet. There's usually some kind of drug ad around it, but you know, you got it. You got the winner.
Yeah. So best $50 I ever spent, because otherwise I wasn't going to watch it. But yeah, I mean, I thought the entire pay-per-view, which we'll go back through and go over some of the other matches, I thought the entire pay-per-view was was overall was pretty great. You know, there were a couple of down moments, and we'll talk about those for sure. But
I want to get back to what Patrick was saying here about how you know, he can watch movies or whatever. That's how I feel about the in-ring product at times. We are watching a predetermined fight. So somebody competing over who is the best, you know, professional wrestler is only going to hold my interest so much because they're not really competing over who's the best professional wrestler. If I want to watch just that, I will watch a kung fu movie. I will watch, you know, I will watch some kind of action movie where it's gonna give me that as well. I need a reason for them to want to punch each. I need somebody to root for. I want somebody to root against. I want me to care why they're fighting, and just fighting for I'm the best doesn't do it for me.
It does it for me.
And I'm not going to argue at the fact that, yes, they were wrestling at a very high level. They were wrestling at a very high speed. They were pulling off some cool moves. There were several of them that I thought, okay, if you ended it right here, when he did the psycho knee to Ospreay as he was jumping off the ropes, I was like, yeah, that would be a great finish. Unexpected, because I didn't expect Brian to win, but, you know. I'm not going to
argue that. If this were December, would this be the match of the year for you?
For me?
Yeah.
No.
What's the match of the year so far?
I'd go probably Sammy Gunther or maybe Cody Roman, just because I have an investment in either of those stories. The Roman Cody one doesn't have the technicality that this one has. If I am talking about what is the best technically wrestled match, oh sure, 100%. This is high for me. But this one's no different to me than the Takeshita one. This one's no different to me than the Kyle Fletcher one. It's Ospreay doing some cool moves with another guy that's in the ring that can go about his speed and doing cool moves with him. Danielson was a step above all the rest of them, but I don't care about whether or not Danielson wins or not at this stage. There was no story, there was no investment in this other than watching them do the cool moves. And I'm jealous that, you know, that you can find that kind of enjoyment in it, and in the sense that you're able to take away from it more than I can. But at the same time, when I'm listening to the crowd talking about, you know, just, I get that this is awesome when they're staring across of it, because they're a dream match. These are two people that are the peak of their game. But as they go along and, you know, this is awesome, fight forever. And I'm like, no, please don't fight forever. Just, you know, fight for right now and then be done, because there's no reason for me to care about you fighting forever.
I think the thing that I can take away from it is it's not just the fact that they're doing cool moves. It's that they're wrestling in a way that almost every single other person in the world that's getting paid to be a professional wrestler cannot wrestle at. Like, these two dudes, and particularly Ospreay now, because now we have Ospreay, like I said, the Japanese matches, the matches he's had here in AEW so far, like, everybody he dances with, people come away being like, holy shit. And it's not just because that's like the AEW style, and it's not that WWE can't, that WWE doesn't want to do this stuff. It's literally that, like, Cody and Roman can't do that. I'm talking about physically, from a talent standpoint, they can't do that. Now, they don't have to, because there is a mechanism behind it, and they have their own idea. Like, in some ways, like the sports entertainment thing, that is their genre of professional wrestling. And I guess I look at it as, like, it's a separate genre from what AEW is trying to be.
Right.
And it's a little bit, to me, like, when I watch WWE sometimes, not that they're like taking it easy, but it's just, it's like watching and listening to like a perfect pop album. And to me, it feels very
manufactured.
Sort of manufactured and kind of plastic. And when I watch Ospreay, it's like, and Danielson and Okada Pack and Roddy and Kyle O'Reilly, a lot of dudes on this card, a lot of women on this card too in AEW. It feels to me like a jolt of electricity. It feels like the first time somebody probably fucking heard the Beatles or the Rolling Stones, and people are like, holy shit, like, what is this? I promise you that people in 30 years from now will look back. Every match from here on out will be judged against Ospreay Danielson. I really do truly believe that.
I get what you're saying about the manufacturedness of WWE, but this is just as manufactured, just in a different manufacturing. Just in a different factory, because this is manufactured choreography, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but it's just, you know,
isn't WWE also manufactured choreography?
It is, but that manufactured choreography has a emotional component that I don't get in the AEW, and that's going to vary. If you have a innate love for some of these wrestlers, you might have that component there that I'm not getting. And that's cool. But to me, and this is going to sound like a backhanded compliment, but it's no different than if I went to Subway and on the placard, they had the world best sandwich artist right here. And he was in there doing the Benihana, you know, knife flips, twirling subs around on his finger and stuff. That would be awesome to see it done. But at the end of the day, it's still just a sandwich.
Right. But in your analogy, AEW would be more like if Gordon Ramsay was behind the Subway thing, as instead of like the snot-nosed little kid that was making the foot long, like if it would still be two sandwiches, but one is being made from a five-star gourmet chef, and the other one is kind of just.
I would argue I have more investment in Gordon Ramsay based on his personality in the TV shows that he has produced than AEW.
Well, because, you know, that's a vibe.
Because at least with Gordon Ramsay, I know that best case scenario, I might get him to put two pieces of bread on either side of my head and call me an idiot sandwich. Because he has expressed personality there. At best, I might get Danielson to go away. Yes, yes, yes. I might get Ospreay to bruv me.
Yeah, but it's just a completely different style.
100%.
And again, I'm not saying that WWE doesn't do this because they don't want to. I'm saying the people over there, they literally can't. They don't have that skill set.
I would say some of them do, but they, because of the product that they are selling, they don't show it. Again, we've named off a handful of people that can do it. I'm not saying that Maxxine Dupri is going to go out there and be Will Ospreay. I'm not saying that, you know, Piper Niven or Chelsea Green are going to be that. I'm not saying that Otis I'm trying to think of who else would be over there. Damian Priest is not going to display that level of thing. Drew McIntyre is not going to display that level of athletic gymnasticism, but there's others that can.
Do y'all think that I've seen different sides of it. Do y'all think that the thing at the end with him not seeing the ref, is that for real, or is that?
It's a work. It's a way for them to tell a story. So if they ever do decide for Ospreay to turn heel, he turns heel by hitting the Storm Driver and dropping somebody on their head, and that's how it starts. And his character as a heel basically becomes, nobody can hang with me, and I end people's career when you wrestle against me.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, he seemed like legit concerned, but then, like, afterward, they're like, no, Danielson's fine. This was all a work. And then.
Which I thought was obvious. I didn't think that there was any.
Yeah, but I'm still considering myself new. I don't know what the fuck's happening. Yeah, yeah.
Nah, it was. that's the way, you know, they're planting a little seed for Ospreay, and now I'm sure the Don Callis family, they'll have a reason to turn on him because they can say he's getting soft.
Yeah.
And that Don can say, I turned you into this kind of killer, and now here you are showing reverence to a legend, like whatever. And that gives him somebody to feud with.
That would be another clue of my example of this. Halfway through this match, the crowd is is putting heat on Don Callis, who was not talking out loud to the audience there. He's not involved in the match. He is sitting behind an announce table doing nothing to the live audience. And yet for 5 minutes, they wanted to put heat on him.
Yeah, and if they don't do a pay-per-view in St. Louis every year, they're pretty dumb, because that crowd was fucking hot.
They were on fire. They were the best crowd that AEW has had, period.
And again, yeah. I've said this last time, but like the ability for the fans to recognize as these two guys are coming down the ramp that they're about to witness something special, and then for these two dudes to deliver on that fact is a massive skill in and of itself. Like the ability to meet people's expectations and exceed it. Like how often in life are you actually, you're expecting something to be great and it actually outlives its expectations. There's not many things in life that are like that. Not even in art. I mean, music, movies, anything like that.
Yeah. No,
so
no.
Again, that is a, that's a testament to these two dudes willing, just laying it on the line. Because honestly, like the way they wrestle, if something goes wrong, you could get seriously hurt.
100%.
Like you break bones, you could break your neck. But again, that's part of that high wire act. Because if one little thing, even in the little sequence where they're like trading kicks and they duck, if Danielson ducks a second slower, he catches one right in the mush. And it doesn't take much to knock you out when you get hit in the chin like that.
And it doesn't take much to permanently end a career of somebody who has, you know, a history
multiple
of concussions.
Yeah.
But this is the way these dudes want to wrestle. This is the art form. It's the style.
This was an amazing exhibition match.
It's the best one I've ever seen. So if this is, if I don't care, like I've said, I say it ad nauseum, I find so much enjoyment out of this.
Worth $50 for sure.
Oh, I told you I'd have paid $100.
Well, let's circle back and do some of the others and maybe go through those a little quicker. I've got a hard out right around 8 or so. House of Black and versus Kingston, Copeland, and Mark Briscoe. In the end, Cope gets the mist and gets pinned. This one, I believe, was one of your great value bangers, correct, Patrick?
Yeah, this had all like a great value brand of something. It kind of looks like what it's supposed to look like. It kind of tastes what it's supposed to taste like, but it's just not, it's not the original. Like, it's Mountain Thunder, not Mountain Dew, you know? Mm-hmm. But that being said, it wasn't terrible. It wasn't bad. I don't really think, this might be shocking, I don't think there was a single bad match on this card, if I'm being honest. Even we'll get to Jericho and Hook. I kind of found a lot of enjoyment out of that one, too.
My dog is angry at that statement.
When we get to it, I'll kind of give my reasons. But no, this was – it's nice that House of Black won. And it's nice that every once in a while you get reminded that, Buddy Matthews and Malakai can go. I think Buddy and Malakai are probably bound sooner than later for WWE.
Yeah.
I think Brody, if Brody King stays around, I do think he has potential as a singles star. I think the crowd can kind of get behind him, and he sort of has a unique look with completely being covered in tattoos. And he has a skill set, and I do think he has some personality about him, especially when he's not having to do the kind of stoic promos that Malakai and Buddy kind of tend to do. So,
this is the closest we get to the style of match that I enjoy. And the fact that they have stopped with House of Black so many times just kicks the legs out from underneath this in so many different ways. I love Brody King. I think he's a talented dude. I like the look. I like the personality he has. He would, without the House of Black, he will be Lance Archer.
Maybe, but Lance, I think, oddly enough, I think the tattoos help Brody a lot. Lance Archer kind of just outside of the hair, he does just kind of look like generic big dude.
He's How about Luchasaurus? Would that be a at least Luchasaurus has a gimmick. So the tattoos would be Brody's gimmick, but do you care?
I mean, if he's in compelling matches as a singles star, yeah. Yeah, I would care. I care about Brody King now. I think I agree with you. House of Black's not been booked great, but there, if they get going on the right track with him, there is potential there. And I do think Malakai will probably win the TNT title off of Copeland. I don't think Copeland doesn't need to be there to have that title for a long time. It's not what he should be used for in AEW.
Would agree on that.
Yeah, it wouldn't hurt my feelings.
I don't know if Tony believes in that same statement, but
I think Tony can be convinced. Apparently a lot of dudes in AEW are just being like, that doesn't work for me, brother. So, and I don't think Copeland is the kind of selfish guy that it's like, I need to have the title. I think he would drop it to a dude like Malakai.
Yeah, I mean, just general impression. I feel like Copeland's out there just having himself a big time. I think he's just found his love of wrestling again. Maybe, I don't know. Looks like he's got a different energy than he had the last year or so in WWE. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, I think he kind of enjoys being a sort of a startup again.
I think also that his time in WWE when he came back was, again, it suffered from the Adam Cole effect, and that anytime he started to get somewhere in WWE, he was out with an injury.
Yeah, maybe so. Let's go ahead and move to the next one, Julia Hart versus Willow for the TBS Championship. Fairly short match. Willow got the win. Not mad at this one.
No, and I mean, it was a decent match. I mean, it wasn't, obviously it's not to the caliber of Ospreay Danielson or some of the other ones we'll talk about, but it wasn't bad. I think Julia has improved a lot in the ring. This TBS title run kind of did nothing for her, and I think mostly it was because they really didn't. It's hard for her with her stature to wrestle opponents.
Well, that and their women's division kind of sucks. I mean, for the talent they have there, that division, the way that division works, sucks.
I haven't had any problems with her as champ until the promo vignette video they did last week, and then they showed it again in like between matches. They showed part of it. Whoever directed that segment needs to be fucking fired. They got zero emotion out of her.
It's tapioca pudding.
It was like completely flat. Like there was like zero fucking emotion. And I was like, you are not intimidating in the least. You sound like you're reading a book to your child and they're bored as hell and you're bored as hell.
And I was too.
Yeah, and so was I. And I was like, that's no bueno.
Yeah, this is where people like her, this is where she should probably be in NXT. Because there's a foundation of learning there. AEW, we've said it before, AEW is not the place you come in to try to be a star. AEW is the place you come in already a star. They can't teach her this because at some point it just becomes a time issue. They're not doing house shows. They don't have a performance center. So, like, you kind of have, much like Hook, you kind of have to learn on the fly. And when you're on a show against a guy like Ospreay, who's wrestled around the world, a guy like Danielson, even a girl like Willow, who has wrestled in Japan and other places, you were going to come across as being inexperienced and a novice. And that's how she came off.
To me, this is it's tied for the second worst match on this card.
It wasn't I didn't think it was a great match. It was short and it didn't need to be longer.
And
I have zero gripes with that.
Willow would have been the first contender to have any legitimacy to coming in there, and that's not saying a lot.
And we'll get her and now Mercedes. I still don't know why it's a month away, but it has to be Mercedes is not healthy. Not
cleared, yeah.
Which, if that's the case, why not literally just have her debut on this pay-per-view?
Or maybe she's got the AEW version of a Roman Reigns contract.
Well,
it sounds like it.
If that's the case, why would Tony bring her in a month ago?
The only reason I can figure, because I thought about this weekend, I was like, this doesn't make any sense, was the fact that they were going to be in Boston, and they're like, might as well do it now.
And they were trying to bounce back after the stuff WWE had done just right before that.
Yeah, but they didn't factor in how not interested we would be if she's not actually wrestling.
Or because she's struggling with what they're giving her. Or she's struggling with what she's trying to do, or whatever it is. But
I just think it kind of baffles me that this company now is 5 years into its run, and the number one thing that has gotten people over organically in this company is when they start putting on good matches, the fans get behind them because the fans are responding to good wrestling. It happened with the Acclaimed. It happened with Danny Garcia. It happened a little bit with Wheeler Yuta when he had his little run. Like, the AEW fan base responds to wrestling. And so when you bring a person in, particularly a person who, does anybody remember any of her WWE promos? Nope. But we remember some of the matches, right? We remember Sasha and Bayley at TakeOver. She has to come in and wrestle. She can't just do these promos because it feels fake. Again, she suffers from what a lot of wrestlers suffer from, which is she feels like she's playing a character. She does not feel authentic. She doesn't feel organic. And it's even worsened by the fact that they're pumping in the CEO stuff at the beginning, and then they cut to the crowd and nobody's chanting it. You know why? Because she's not fucking wrestling. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Willow got a bigger pop.
You got to wrestle in AEW to get a pop, to get over.
Willow got a bigger pop than her at the end of that pay-per-view. Willow's been wrestling a third less of the time than she has. And she hasn't been in the big company like Mercedes has been.
And I guarantee you it's at probably a third of the market that you've paid.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, this is like, she at Double or Nothing, she better come out the gate and put on a type of match where we go, holy shit, we forgot how good this girl is. Because if not, you are really going to have to ask yourself if this is not spent a lot of money and made a massive mistake.
Yeah. Roderick Strong versus Kyle O'Reilly for the Intercontinental Championship.
This was the other match that was tied for the Willow one at the second worst match.
Oh, dude, I love this one. There's two matches I've watched twice now, and it's Ospreay Danielson, and it was Kyle O'Reilly.
Why?
Again, the physicality of it. When they are trading blows, you can you can hear it. You can kind of feel it. From the chops to the forearms. The kicks.
Roddy's got a lot of creativity in his moveset also.
And yeah, Roddy's ability to hit these backbreakers from anywhere, and then...
Master of the backbreaker.
Absolutely. And just the... Again, there is an emotional connection. I love Roderick Strong. I think I've said on this podcast before, when I was wrestling, I stole so much shit from Roderick Strong that I probably owe him like $75. I probably owe him everything I ever made as a wrestler, which was probably about $75 over 2 years, because I just straight stole stuff from him. And a lot of people stole stuff from Roderick Strong. Like, he is a master of the backbreaker. He's a master of professional wrestling. Mm-hmm. I think what hurt this match, the crowd kind of got behind it a little bit. It's the fact that Roddy is saddled in this Undisputed Kingdom thing, which has been start, stop, at times non-existent and not good any way you shape it. If they would have really taken a month and built Roddy versus O'Reilly, I think the emotional investment of this match would have been really good.
I think that if you're building this organization, this faction, you've got the Undisputed Kingdom with their meaningless belts. You then have the Wardlow needs a title to be relevant in anything, because he is not demonstrating any value to the brand at this point. And the fact that they put him into the front of the line in order to go for a world title and then did nothing with him, it is you know, what was the even point of that? Why even have this guy involved in this at this stage, other than to be the guy that comes in and, you know, helps the other people that are already way more successful than you get over, because you're not helping them get over.
They
took the Roderick Strong I liked, where he was with Neck Strong, the yelling at people's names into their face, and I'm not going to argue that he's not a great technical wrestler. I love the various, you know, suplexes into backbreakers and stuff like that he does, but they've killed any momentum this dude ever had.
I agree with you. We talked about before. We thought that they should have kept him a babyface and had him feud against the Undisputed Kingdom instead of having them join, because at least they would have had something to do while MJF was on the shelf. They could have been, and that the Neck Strong thing was getting over in the wheelchair. But again, if we're just judging this based off wrestling matches, these two dudes wrestled a phenomenal match.
But you can't just judge this off them wrestling a match. I mean, but this is a television product. This is a, whether they want to call themselves or not, this is a sports entertainment product.
But I don't think the AEW fans and the 700 and something thousand people that are watching weekly, the diehard fans, it's not a sports entertainment product to them. It's a pro wrestling project.
Pro wrestling entertainment product. Because the stuff has to serve as a form of entertainment. And there's only so much that gets you.
There's only so much that gets you for a massive, widespread sort of fan base, which I'll give you. But like, there's a lot of people like me who are entertained by just the wrestling. And so when you get in and the chops are landing and they're trading forearms and they're not half-assing it, they're going at 100%, I do get entertained by that.
I get the fighting spirit.
To your credit, that's probably why they have not expanded their audience. And maybe there is a debate to be had internally in AEW. Should we maybe do a... How can we change things up to maybe appeal to a wider audience? But this is a niche product in a way.
Jamie was in the living room for the first part of the show, and by the time they were in the Julia Hart match versus Willow, I turned to her and I was like, "We would have probably seen one match at this point." And Julia Hart and Willow was the third, so like, we would have seen one match, and then we would have probably had 20 minutes worth of commercials and backstage vignettes and such. And I'm like, that to me, I think, is why you can justify paying $50. It still gets fucking expensive to do since they're expanding while they're doing it. But like, we're not here for the shenanigans. No, we're not. A 4-hour show with 3 wrestling matches or 4 wrestling matches is ridiculous.
But my question to you, was she interested in what was going on?
No, she doesn't like AEW. It's too violent for her. She's seen too much blood on AEW. She does like Orange Cassidy.
I've got a friend who just recently got back into wrestling, and he's been watching. He picked up on WrestleMania kind of thing, and I'm going to try to get him to watch Wednesday just as to get a fresh eyes outside of this to see if he can see the thing that I'm missing to kind of.
Did you preface it with all your bullshit?
Nope.
I mean, I agree with you, but in the same sort of token, there's probably not a lot of casual wrestling fans or anything like that that would watch Jerry Lynn versus RVD and find any kind of enjoyment out of it. But what you can watch when you watch the old Jerry Lynn versus RVD matches is you see the fingerprint of what they are doing influencing everyone who's wrestling today. Mm-hmm. And I think that is at the heart of it. There is something to be said about, just like in music or anything, there are the people who influence the people who sell out the stadiums and play the big pop music. that you've never heard about.
100%. There's always going to be the people that they look to that they thought were amazing.
Yeah. But and to me, people, that's AEW.
But you have to keep in mind, those are the people that people like that are being influenced by them that, you know, you may get a sample of, but you're not going out there to get the paw tattoo from the 1990s or the you know.
Yeah, I agree with it. But when you ask what enjoyment do I find, it's an enjoyment in that. It's the enjoyment of seeing, even in this match, Roddy and Kyle O'Reilly. You'll see a sequence in that, you know, I think 10 years from now, 10, 20 years from now, like people in the Performance Center 20 years from now will probably be watching a couple of Roderick Strong matches. Like Shawn Michaels will be like, you need to watch Roderick Strong to some guy, and he'll take a couple of things. He won't steal everything, because if he stole everything, it wouldn't be as, you know, he's got to make it his own. But we've seen this already in NXT, because the dude I keep seeing highlights from, the Jay Malachi, Jay Evans, mm-hmm. What's his finishing move? It's the Osprey Cutter.
Yeah. And I'm not arguing that, and I you know, that's great. Hopefully, you know, that next generation that's taking this will find that way to make it next level for me. And I don't care if that's in WWE or AEW or MLW or.
Well, it won't be them. It won't be MLW, and it won't be NWA. Billy Corgan has a 2-year run of being good at something, and then everything goes to shit. Smashing Pumpkins, NWA. That's what it is.
Checks out. So we didn't get to Adam Cole's return yet. Let's cover that real fast and then keep moving.
He came back.
So he's back in a wheelchair, gets up, stands up. We all knew that was going to happen from the moment they rolled him out there. Like, yeah, okay, he's going to stand up. So how quickly is he back? Or is this a he's almost clear, ready to be cleared thing, and they just wanted the pop?
I got a different question for that. Do you care?
No.
I especially don't care if he's going up against Wardlow, which is what it looks like they're going to do, because he was eyeballing Wardlow. Unless they just all beat the shit out of him, and then I guess I could kind of, and you know, Wardlow is a dude that needs he fits better in the other company. He would be much better in WWE.
I will care about this post, not pre.
I will care whenever MJF comes back. But at this point, the Undisputed Kingdom is so bad as a group and as a act, I don't want to see MJF come back and fight them. I would much rather see MJF come back and go up against Swerve, yes, or Ospreay or anybody else.
Yep. If they forgot this storyline, I wouldn't care. It can be Vince McMahon in the exploding limo. I don't care how he survived. I don't care why the limo blew up. Let's just move on with life.
Okay, sorry, I was on my phone just now. Carter got out of class early, so I don't have a hard 8 o'clock out anymore. Jamie's going to get him. So, okay, I think we talked that one to death. Let's get into Hook and Jericho. This match was way too fucking long. Yep. And then Jericho knocked Hook out with the bat. Once he saw the bat swing, you're like, okay, well, he's not getting up from that. And if he does, then they're fucking stupid.
And then even better, the toughest man in AEW had his daddy come in.
Well, the man just got hit in the face with a bat. Come on now. Got smacked. No one hits anybody in the face with a bat wrestling. I didn't hate this match as much as everybody else did. I agree with you, it was too long. For a title, it didn't matter. Completely forgot that FTW rules meant you could pin people on the floor. I forgot that.
Hey, so did the refs.
And so did the fans. Again, that's a thing that Justin Roberts needs to say when he's announcing the thing. But
just because you say FTW rules doesn't mean that everybody knows the fucking rules.
Not even the refs.
Same thing as like bloodline rules. What the fuck does that mean? Yeah.
But at least they played that up. They didn't know what those rules meant.
But I will say, as much as Jericho is getting go away heat, I mean, he literally got a chance of please retire. If they're able to spin this in a type of way, it could be interesting. Yeah, I pitched this thing a couple months ago. where I was like, since WWE was going away with the term sports entertainment, Chris Jericho should literally trademark the last sports entertainer. I think he should just do WWE stuff in AEW and be a massive heel.
He trademarks everything else, man.
Yeah, he trademarked with the Learning Tree, the Jericho Vortex.
Did he really?
Yeah, the Jericho Vortex. Now, the only thing, like, I liked the match somewhat, or I didn't hate the match. Again, though, Hook is just, he's not ready to be in this position. He's just not.
He had a couple good suplexes.
Hey, look, listen, for everyone that he does that looks good, there's one that somebody takes, you're like, oh, their neck is fucked.
Well,
right.
And he's just constantly out of position. He's constantly in a point where the guy who's wrestling is be like, come over here. Like, come over here. Feed into me. You're not feeding. You're slowing down the pace.
Sub-Zero or Scorpion?
And again, like, the fact that they like, the Judas Effect elbow that Jericho hits, they made it to point not many people have kicked out of it. And then Hook is the guy that kicks out of it? Hook is legitimately a shoot, probably 170 pounds. He is not
generous there.
And I could be being very generous. Now, he's in fantastic shape, but he has no kind of girth or heft about him whatsoever. He's a skinny kid. He's a lacrosse player. So, again, it is weird on a pay-per-view where you see Samoa Joe and Swerve, Danielson and Ospreay, even Roddy Strong, Collar, Adam Copeland, all these, House of Black, all these dudes. And then this dude is on the pay-per-view too, and not a guy like Ricky Starks, and not a guy like Big Bill, and not, it's weird.
Ricky Starks was on TV a couple weeks ago, right?
He was injured at this point.
He hadn't been on, and then he was on some random, like, Collision, I feel like, a few weeks back.
But, like,
in one of the tag matches or something, right? Or am I crazy?
No, I think he was, he was definitely in the tag team tournament. I don't know if he got hurt in that. Yeah. But, again, you get what I'm saying. Like, there are other dudes that AEW has on the roster that should just be getting this time other than Hook. I don't see what AEW management has in Hook. And it might be as simple as his dad's a commentator and his dad's the world's greatest dad and is getting him on the show because he's pitching him ideas. And if that's the case, good on you, man. But, like,
that's the only thing I can figure.
But, like, he looks like he doesn't belong. And it's not to say he won't be a good wrestler. It just won't happen in AEW, I don't think.
He didn't need to be on this pay-per-view.
No.
Neither did Jericho. We don't need fucking Jericho on every pay-per-view.
No.
This was the low point of the show for me.
But if Jericho throws the FTW belt in the trash and we do away with it, that will be success in and of itself. So.
Yeah, this when I was saying the other two were tied, this is the one that is the bottom rung for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we could keep going, but I think we all know where we pretty much stand. I was very surprised to hear that Patrick was entertained by it.
Well,
at least for a little bit.
I think I was entertained more by the crowd because, again, this dude was the first AEW champion, and the landscape has changed so much that the smarky AEW crowd that would normally pay reverence to a guy like Jericho and all he's done are literally like, please retire.
Well, here's the thing. It's a thing of he went to do the Judas Effect, and it looked like it was painstaking for him to do. There was no sense of, like, swiftness or agility or anything about it. It just looked like it was either hurting him to do, or it just doesn't come with the ease of which it should. If you're going to try to pull that move off, like you said before, like it's you got somebody like Andrade basically doing the same thing, but like 100 times faster.
It feels like Dwayne Wade felt in his last season in the NBA, where you watch him and you go, damn, y'all remember when Dwayne Wade was like dunking on motherfuckers and averaging 28 a game, and now he's like struggling to kind of come off the bench and keep up the pace. Like, sometimes it does just pass you by.
Well, yeah, you just got to know when to give it up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I think Danielson's making the smart move by being like, hey, I'm getting too old for this.
But Jericho's also, you know, like 8 years older than Danielson.
Yeah, but like Sting was even older than that, but Sting could still fucking go.
Eh. I'm not going to say that Sting put on some matches, but the Sting was helped in the fact that he was being carried by a younger dude that
sure. He didn't have like in the fact that it was tag matches, but like he still
and he also
went across the ring with a sense of like motivation. And Jericho don't have that anymore.
Well, Jericho thrives on the adulation, and right now Sting didn't have the baggage that Jericho has.
Yeah. Also, if you got the guy, all these fucking sexual allegations against him, maybe take him off TV. I don't know.
He seems to be very much in Tony Khan's ear, which is why he's getting a pay-per-view match thrown together at the last minute.
Bothers the shit
have
out of
me. And you made me think about this again. Have we talked about how hipster the AEW fan base is?
I don't think so.
I don't know if they actually enjoy what they're seeing half the time. I think they just want you to think that they're better than you and that they get something that you don't.
I could say the same thing about the hardcore WWE fan. I know the kind of toxic AEW fan you're talking about, but I think there's tribalism on both sides.
And I'm not arguing that either.
Yeah, both of it is kind of stupid. There is sort of a smarkiness. There's a smarkiness about an AEW fan, but there is a sort of arrogant dismissiveness about the hardcore WWE fan where they post pictures of half-empty arenas and they talk shit on the company for doing that.
And this was a very full arena. I want to clarify that.
Yes, this was massive.
And this was the crowd that I complained that AEW generally doesn't have on their television show.
Right.
Yeah.
The crowd last Wednesday was pretty hot too, I thought. But yeah, let's go ahead and get into Toni Storm versus Thunder Rosa. Thunder without the makeup, which I thought was interesting. Toni retains though. And probably pissed Steven off.
I don't need any more Toni, but this match was you know, medium grade AEW match.
It was fine.
It had the Thunder Rosa thing popped me in the sense that, you know, Toni went out there and was like, you know, you can't wrestle me in your makeup. And Thunder was like, you know what? You've disfigured me. So I'm going to be out here being quote unquote disfigured. So I popped for that.
I am waiting for the day when the girl who stole my heart, Mariah May, hits Toni Storm in the back of the head and tries to take her title. And I will be very much in her favor. I will be cheering for the bad person in that feud. I cannot help myself. Whatever. Till Jamie Hayter comes back.
Did you see that Jamie Hayter was trending the other night?
I did see that.
So where does Toni go from here?
I don't know. I think we talked about this last week that I think that it's kind of run its course. I think they're probably waiting right now just until somebody like Britt comes back to maybe put her in a thing with her and maybe get the title. I don't know. Maybe they get it back on Britt sooner rather, or Jamie Hayter, probably.
Because, while I'm not enjoying it, you already know where the direction Willow's going. And that's your mid-card women's title.
I wouldn't be surprised if Mariah turns on her sooner rather than later, and that's the match at Double or Nothing. Because you have Double or Nothing and then Forbidden Door sort of a month right after that. Yeah, because Memorial Day weekend, that is in June. Because they made a big point during this match that Mariah May had the mentor from Stardom that was there, that she shared a kiss with, and then she wore clothes. So I wouldn't be surprised. Because if it's not Mariah May, to your guys' point, who is it? They don't really have anybody else.
Is TK doing the old gotta leave this belt on Toni until my injured star comes back, like he did with Jade Cargill and Chris Statlander?
I mean, it could be. That's still, to me, the funniest thing ever. that he made up his mind that Chris Statlander was going to beat Jade Cargill. So she got hurt. He literally had Jade go undefeated. The minute Statlander is healthy, she comes in and beats her after a match and takes the title. I mean, that's just kudos, I guess, to sticking to your guns. But sometimes you got to play a little jazz. Yeah, play a little jazz, bro.
And what happens if she doesn't come back?
Who doesn't come back?
Well, Hayter, Britt, whoever.
Well,
you get Timeless Tony for a while.
Yep. I mean, it also wouldn't shock me if it's Tony Storm versus Jamie Hayter at All in Wembley. That wouldn't shock me either. Now you're gonna have to add some elements to this Tony Storm character. You're gonna have to do something.
That vignette, the recorded promo that she did, I guess it was Friday or Saturday night. Did y'all see that?
Yeah, I thought it was good.
Yeah,
I didn't see that one.
I just saw it on Twitter. But people were talking about it, and I was like, oh, shit. Tony switched up. She got a little medieval kind of for a minute, it sounded like. She was...
The only thing I saw was her, the media scrum, where she was telling us that, you know, if you want to watch wrestling with storylines, go watch a movie. Which is how.
She listened to this podcast.
A lot of people got up in arms, too, because she looked at Tony and was like, don't worry, darling, when I ever win a big match, I'll never invite you to the ring. Sort of taking a little... I didn't think it was taking a shot at Cody, but people got up in arms on Twitter about it. I was like, she's just taking the piss out of stuff. First of all, if there was anybody in AEW that took shots at WWE, it was motherfucking Cody Rhodes. There's only one man's ever smashed a throne in AEW, okay? So
he did not say Triple H's name. That could have been anybody's throne.
Well, that's true. But then people were throwing up to the people that were complaining about that on Twitter. People were replying with the old Cody bits from BTE, where he was constantly like taking the shots and the jabs at WWE. So I'm like, this is all, what are we getting up in arms about? Jesus Christ.
The one where he's like backstage and he's like, you want to hear a scary story?
Yeah. At some point, you just want to talk to these people and do the baby Billy. Like, go outside, nerd.
Go outside, nerd. We got no time for your useless chime-ins. All right. So we've done Ospreay and Danielson already. Bucks versus FTR. We get the return we all expected from Jack Perry. And he helps the Bucks get their win in the ladder match.
I'm not sold on it like, you know, some people, but I'm in my wait and see. But he's partnered with a group that I actively want to go away.
Well, surprise, surprise, I am 100% sold on it. First of all, before I get to Jack Perry, I thought the match was good. It was every now and again, you need to kind of remind people that like ladders and tables and shit are actually kind of brutal and they actually do really hurt. And so I think that both teams did a really good job in this match of just showcasing the physicality that kind of comes when you're taking bumps on tape, because we can get sort of immune to this kind of stuff because we see so many ladder matches and stuff. So I thought there was creative ways, like Cash Wheeler getting going down and getting crotched in the ladder and taking the BTE trigger on there. I thought that was a cool spot. Also, Cash just like 1,000 miles an hour doing the suicide dive and smacking the table. Like, yeah, it's kind of brutal stuff. And if these two teams don't like each other personally, it's kind of crazy they have such good chemistry with each other.
They make it work.
They do make it work. And I don't know if, you know, maybe we're all getting worked with how much these two teams kind of dislike each other. They might all be cracking up at this kind of shit because they do work wonderfully together. And I thought the Jack Perry thing, I kind of saw it when the fans started coming. I was like, that's Jack Perry. But it was kind of a cool way to get into it because you had him immediately go for the ladder and the security guards were coming in as he was sliding into the ring.
Yeah, I thought that was a good way to do that.
Yeah.
The only thing I really don't like about it is they were like, oh, he's escorted away and blah, 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 and he's not supposed to be here, but he's still, like, listed on their roster, if I'm not wrong.
Oh, wow. Right? I don't know that.
So. But this match also made me remember we texted on about Collision, and this was the pre-match of this one got weird in a way that makes me think back to this one where they were doing the Matt and Nick 69 each other while Wheeler was slapping their asses, and it, you know, whatever. This and Hook remind me how indie-rific AEW can be.
Sure, but I don't think there was anything indie-rific in this match. I didn't see the Collision match, so it might have been, but I don't think there was anything indie-rific in this one.
Well, I mean, the Bucks always just have they have their generic stuff that they will always do, and it is very much a spot fest kind of match, and that's all I can ever take away from a Bucks match. And that's just what it is to me.
And, you know, I talked about, I think last week, the Jack Perry New Japan entrance. And there is something to be said about sort of the power of social media, because that was never shown on AEW TV. Right. And as soon as Jack gets escorted from the building, it was a kind of audible, "Oh, cry me a river." That's going to catch on. They might have a problem with Jack Perry because I don't know if he's going to be able to come in and be a heel. I really don't. I think people are going to get behind this dude. If he starts coming out in the goat mask and he's got the Cry Me a River jacket, if he's even somewhat capable of cutting a type of promo, because he has gotten better in Japan cutting promos, I do think they have sort of this like anti-hero, anti-establishment route they can sort of go down.
He's gonna have to do a lot of stuff. Yes, he's still on the roster, and if you care, he's 97-47-1.
That's pretty good record. That's pretty good.
I'm sure that makes him number one for a title somewhere.
I bet to get to number 100, I guarantee you what I would do, I would have him wrestle one of the Young Bucks and they just lay down Jeff Jarrett style, and he just pins him to get to the first wrestler. Because does anybody have 100?
I'm gonna scroll through here real quick.
I bet nobody has 100.
He was the first of 50.
He was the first of 50.
I remember that.
I'm guessing Orange Cassidy might be close. Let me get down to him.
Cassidy would probably be the only dude that I would say that would be close.
Penta's at 97 and 65.
So damn, it's a race.
Orange Cassidy's already well past it.
Okay, well, kudos to that guy.
150. 40 losses, 2 draws.
They should have Jack Perry win 100, and they should immediately have like a huge celebration, and that's how they should heal it up. I think he's got something, and I think they have something with him.
I mean, it was best case scenario for him, because before all of this, we were like, this dude needs a major fucking do-over. Like a reset. They were trying to do it right with him burying his old clothes in the desert and all that stuff, and it wasn't working. I think this is probably best case for him. Like, he got very fucking lucky, it feels like.
I think this is his ball to drop. I think the fans are going to get behind him and believe him, and it's up to him to make it work. But you could easily convince me that 6 months from now he fucks it all up and ruins all the goodwill. I mean, that's possible too.
Max Caster is also over 114.
Whew.
Damn, really?
Powerhouse Hobb is at 98.
Did y'all hear about Caster's pre-show rap on the way to the ring?
I didn't. What'd he say?
Well, cringe. He was talking about basically sexually assaulting Jay White.
Yep.
And everybody else is like, dude, read the fucking room.
Nope.
Well,
he is. I mean, here's what kills me. Go back and listen to what he's rapped the entire time.
Yeah.
This ain't.
Well,
that
he did this a couple months ago, and everybody's like, "Yo, man, maybe you need to like get this shit cleared before you go out on."
I've been complaining about this forever, but you know.
Well, let's do. Yeah, that makes sense. So Swerve and Joe for the finale of the night went the way we thought it would go, right? We all thought Swerve was going to walk out with it. Do we think he keeps it until All Out?
I think the main event of Wembley is Swerve and Ospreay. I think that has been clear for a while.
When do they do the big poker chip above the ring match where you can cash in and do whatever?
Double or nothing.
Okay, yeah, then there's nobody there that will be challenging him and winning before then. Because that's the only way I think they would do it, is if you could pull a Money in the Bank style thing.
Is Hangman injured, or is he just taking some time off?
I couldn't tell you.
He's suspended.
Oh, that's yeah, he's fired. Isn't he fired? Or they just suspended him. Kenny's fired.
Hangman?
Well,
but he was fired from the Elite, quote unquote.
Yeah, the Elite fired Kenny and suspended Hangman.
But that was big enough. Being fired from Elite was big enough that he is no longer allowed on the TV show, evidently.
I read today that he's coming back May 1st, for whatever that's worth. I don't know if it's true, but that's what the report was. But also, like, he's just now having surgery. How the fuck would he come back on May 1st? That's like next week. I just realized that.
You know, maybe he's going to pull a
Mercedes.
A Miro, or a Adam Cole, or a, who is it, Keith Lee, or one of these others where Tony doesn't actually know they're injured.
Maybe. So, I mean, we're all happy. Swerve got it. Internet was happy. I think it was done the right way, right?
Yeah,
no objections.
I'm glad they gave him a little bit of time at the end to sort of celebrate, and I'm glad that they talked about how monumental of a thing this is, at least maybe not in storyline, but at least in the reality of, if you're a pro wrestling fan, you know, can we even count on two full hands the amount of black major world champions in a company? I mean there's Ron Simmons and The Rock,
Kofi
and Big E,
Bobby Lashley,
like there's
Tony Atlas.
Yeah, so there's like not many, and particularly if you got to think about, you know, when Swerve was a kid, guys that sort of looked like him weren't projected to the top of the card. And so for him to be now the champion, so that, you know, kids who are watching can see him to be champion, I do think, I know it might be a little bit cheesy, I do think this is important.
Representation matters.
Yeah, and it should be celebrated. So I'm glad that they gave him that time at the end.
I do feel remiss in not saying Booker T, because he wasn't just one, he wasn't just two, he was six time.
Yep. So yeah, so Booker. So, but again, like, think about, we just like, how many wrestling's been going on for 100+ years in this country, and how many guys did we name? Six.
No, we named more than that, but.
But you get the point, like, yeah.
I mean, no, it's predominantly on a lopsided basis, because we still would have to throw in Mark Henry too. There's still a couple that we haven't talked about, but yeah, it is still predominantly on the other side.
And the Mark, not to discredit Mark Henry, but that was when the World Heavyweight Championship, the WWE one was the one that kind of mattered. But Swerve is a fantastic choice for champion. He looks the part. He looked the part Sunday night. He came in looking like $1 million with the Killmonger gear. He looks like a star in a way that really nobody else in wrestling has his look, as a hip-hop sort of mega star. But even when he was a heel, sort of the hip-hop supervillain, that's never kind of been done before. He moves in a way that nobody else really moves in the ring. So I'm excited, and this feels like a true reset post-Punk era, because Samoa Joe, as great as he is and was, he was a transitional champion. He was always meant to be a transitional champion. So now with Swerve and with Ospreay and some of these other guys now at the top of the card, this feels like, let's put all of that other stuff behind us, and here are the dudes who are going to move us into a new era of AEW.
I was looking for it just now to read it word for word, but I didn't see it. But earlier I saw that R-Truth congratulated Kofi on his big win.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's great. And I've said it before, like, if you give Triple H a choice, who's he taking from the AEW roster? I think he's taking Swerve.
Yeah, he's probably regretting that one. Right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I definitely don't think that was his choice in the first place.
Probably not, but yeah, I mean, there's no way you can't look at Swerve and be like, damn, if he was on a WWE stage, massive, just massive.
But would they...
But again, I
how would they use him? It's a matter of...
Well, that's the point, too. Does he get to, in that sort of roster of WWE, would he even get to this kind of point? I don't know. I think so, because I think he's that talented, but... Yeah. I mean, there is something to be said about that. And, you know, probably getting fired and getting let go probably lit a fire under his ass, too. Now, he's changed a lot physically. He has probably added maybe 20, 30 pounds. And, you know, there's something to be said for the other people thought you weren't good enough. And so you go to the other team and you make it work and you flourish. And now he's the one holding the gold belt. He's the star.
Yeah.
And I thought the match was good, too, by the way. It's just the match happened on the same card that Ospreay and Danielson happened on, so we're not going to really remember it, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, final thoughts on that one. Let's switch over to WWE for a bit. You got any final thoughts? The pay-per-view in general, I just thought it was a really good show, top to bottom.
I think it was a solid A. I don't think it was an A+. Because of, you know, Jericho and Hook was on there and some other kind of stuff that really wasn't that great. But I this is a solid A. And like I've said before, I will put up with 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks of shitty television. If I can watch 4 hours on a Sunday every couple of months where it's balls to the wall action, that's enough for me. It's not enough for some people, but it's enough for me.
Yeah, Steven doesn't have his headphones on. Too. Okay. I didn't see him on your left ear. Final thoughts on the show before we get into AEW or WWE? Sorry.
Yeah, I said my final thought as my first thought.
First thought, best thought,
only thought.
Only thought. Well, let's get into SmackDown. I only made one note. I said, oh, they done fucked up KO. Also, why are they going after him? What am I forgetting?
He showed up when they, if you remember, he was the one that sparked the winning has consequences original line, because he showed up, was walking into Cody Rhodes's dressing room and said, hey, there's a broom closet down the way for you.
Gotcha. Okay. I knew there was something that I probably just forgot. But they fucked him up real good.
They've
gone completely off their... Yeah. They've gone completely off their no blood rule. Because that motherfucker was busted.
Well, I don't think... That wasn't... He didn't gig, right? That was legit?
It looked like it was legit. I don't know. I mean,
didn't he come out bleeding?
Mm-mm.
Because that's where he was bloody when they cut to him. Because Tama just threw him out there, from what I remember. I thought.
I can't remember. I thought it was legit. I do kind of like the story of the bloodline going from a sort of calculated mafia unit to now a sort of bloodthirsty gang that is putting hits out on everybody.
Is this making you buy into Solo slightly more?
No. Okay. Because he's not doing the hit. It's Tonga. Mm-hmm. Tonga looks cool. Well, Tonga looks like a psychopath.
But for all the things that we got tired of talking about with Roman, you know, a year and a half ago, we were talking about he was, you know, the charismatic, yet self-doubtful leader, blah blah blah, but he was able to carry that with some of his subtleties and his backstage acting and stuff like that, and Solo don't have that.
Solo doesn't have a presence the way Roman Reigns has, which is not necessarily a knock on Solo. There are not many wrestlers in current wrestling that have a presence like a Roman Reigns.
Yeah, but it's they're going to try to make this the main storyline again, probably for a while, right? And
to me, this is coming off as like an early Scarface kind of thing, where he's up and coming, he's trying to maintain his cool, but we all know at some point he's going to be face down in a pile of cocaine with his little friends blazing.
I wish that Solo just had some of the charisma as Al Pacino, because if he did, I'd be fully bought into this. This would be a hell of a story. It's just a Solo kind of, it sometimes looks like you're looking at just a 2x4 and there ain't nothing there.
Yeah. He's trying to do the subtle that Roman has, but he needs to,
yeah.
Because we haven't seen the other dynamic of it, it's not coming across.
Sure.
And again, Jacob Fatu has a type of presence about him if you've seen any of his clips. Now, whether they let him be unleashed like that in WWE is another story entirely.
That's the one that I'm super excited for, but I'm also just waiting to be equally as disappointed because of the transition of the difference of where he's been versus what he's allowed to do now.
Still, though, there's a physical presence about him that I don't think Solo has. And I think that when Fatu debuts, it won't take long for fans to be like, well, why is Solo the one in charge? Because these two dudes look way tougher standing beside him than what he does. Why are they taking orders from him?
And maybe that's the story as we find out why.
I mean, it could be. But again, this is, I mean, I say it's not a knock on Solo. It is a knock on Solo. I don't think I don't think he's ready for the moment they're trying to put him in.
No. Y'all got any other SmackDown notes?
We know who we got the AJ.
Yeah. AJ, so we get AJ versus Cody not this weekend, but next weekend, yep. First weekend of May.
Little Bullet Club kind of throwback there. Cody was he the lead? Cody never was the leader of Bullet Club though, was he? He was just in it. I think Kenny was the leader of that. AJ was straight up the leader because AJ debuted in New Japan, was the leader of Bullet Club, and then I believe he beat Okada or Tanahashi for the title and was the IWGP champion for a little bit. And then I think Kenny booted AJ and Kenny became the leader. But I could be wrong about my New Japan lore.
I had to look it up because I couldn't remember either, but they are saying that in New Japan has officially said he was a leader at one point.
Cody? Okay.
Yep. They call him a leader.
All right.
So if y'all don't have anything else from there, I hate to just blow over that, but I didn't take any notes. I was a little preoccupied Friday night. And then last night I was just trying to sit and watch a show without having to take notes, but we got the Chad Gable promo, or if you want to call it that, with the Alpha Academy out there, and he's giving all them hell, telling them that he's been, you know, training a bunch of losers, and then he basically asks them if they're going to still follow him or whatever. You know, Otis is kind of reluctant to fall in line, but how long do you think Otis lasts with that?
I think they might pretend to be bad for a little. They might try to go for a little bit, but they quickly get replaced with, I'm hoping. This is me with my hoping fantasy book. They quickly get replaced and jumped by the Creeds.
Oh, yeah. We kind of talked about that last
week. Yeah, that should happen like next week. don't wait. Don't wait. You don't need to draw this out. Chad Gable's hot right now. Keep it going. It's time to give him a stable of badass dudes behind him and push him as much as you can push a mid-card talent.
I forgot he was Shorty G.
Yeah.
I saw that online somewhere this weekend. I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Sure was. This could be interesting. How long before you think they end up back with Gable versus Sammy again? Or do you think that's done?
No, I don't think it's done because I think they held back in their match in Montreal. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the match at Backlash and they run it back and actually like give them more time.
I don't know if it's that quick, but I think Clash would be where I would guess it would be.
So when does Phil Brooks come back? Do we have any idea on that?
My guess would be Clash again.
Because does it go Backlash and then Clash of the Castle? Is that the next two?
Yeah, Clash is in June. There might be a Saudi Arabia thing in between there.
The King of the Ring is coming up at some point.
Let's see here.
And Saudi's got to get their money. But no, I think Chad should be the guy that should beat Sammy. I don't think Sammy should have a long run with it. I don't think anybody post Gunther should have a long reign with the Intercontinental Championship. I think you should kind of pass it around a little bit.
So that was established last night too. Gunther made himself the first entrant in the King of the Ring deal or whatever, putting his hat in there in the ring for that, as it were.
This, I mean, if he doesn't win King of the Ring, I would be amazed at this stage.
Y'all got any thoughts on Becky winning the championship?
I'm going to give my last thought first again here on this one. This is one of those Raws where it was a solid, decent show. It wasn't anything that, you know, rocked it. There wasn't anything that, you know, sank it. It was just a, you know, I'm not mad at this show, but I ain't going to, if you ask me several months from now to remember this show, I ain't.
It was fine.
But it's one of those shows where, in hindsight, a lot of stuff happened that set up a lot of stuff for the future. Where while you forget about this show, you know, 6 months from now, when you're seeing the fallout of what this show sets up, you'll be like, oh, crap, all that came from this show.
They're just in their typical post-WrestleMania malaise. It happens every year because WrestleMania feels like a series finale, especially this past WrestleMania. But the problem with pro wrestling is that there's no off-season. It doesn't turn off. So they have to keep going.
And see, yes, WrestleMania was a series finale. So we are now in the next season where they are establishing those storylines. And that's what I'm saying. There wasn't anything horrible about this show, but this is an establishment show.
Yeah, I didn't watch last night for the wrestling. I fast forward most of the wrestling. I was watching for, oh, wait, there's a backstage segment.
But
or
see, if you fast forward through the wrestling, you miss some of those establishments as well because you got a tag team match with Awesome Truth and DIY.
I didn't fast forward all of it. Okay. I did watch that.
so you got the establishment of maybe the Way 2.0, if depending on who all goes heel with Candace and Indy.
I did fast forward that.
You got the Judgment Day falling apart because Damian Priest can't lead people.
Yeah, that's happening pretty fast. Feels like, at least.
Now, mind you, half of them are injured.
Yeah. Did you get to watch it, Patrick?
No, I watched Ospreay and Danielson and some of the Dynasty matches again, and I just read the Raw results because I'm not even gonna front. It is what it is.
It's not
your thing. I get it. It's not my thing. I can't tell you the last time I watched a straight wrestling match on Monday Night Raw all the way through. Well, I take that back. The Sammy Gunther match I did watch.
And that's the difference. And I am under no, you know, delusion of this. If you go back and read the outcome of what happened without watching Raw, it's a recap of a show. You get the gist of what's going on. You don't need to go back and watch it because it tells you the story you need to go. Whereas with an AEW show, the recap is going to tell you a whole bunch of moves, but seeing a cool move isn't the same as reading Ospreay jumps off top rope and gets hit in the face with a knee.
Yeah, so you see that, that shit happen live, you're like, fuck, he caught.
But the difference being is I don't need to watch 32 minutes of that when I can just find a GIF.
No, you have to watch, you got to feel it from the beginning, man. You got to vibe with it. You got it. At this point, it's all about vibes. The Dynasty pay-per-view, the AEW pay-per-view is about vibes. So I know it's going to be 4 hours, And you know what I do? I get my TV squared away. I just sit back and I'm like, I'm about to just sink right into this thing. The way I watch like old Tarkovsky movies, like Russian cinema, where I'm like, I'm not even gonna be able to understand half of this plot. I'm just gonna read the subtitles. I'm gonna let this thing just wash over me. And that's how I feel about AEW.
And I will just go and find that gif of the baby carriage going down the stairs and just have my moment.
At the end, at one last thing on Ospreay Danielson, at the end where they had the High Noon standoff and they both go with each other, and then bam, he hits the elbow before he hits the knee. Beautiful.
What's
stuff.
Doing?
Is that little man?
That's little man.
What's up, little man? Of note, this was the first pay-per-view probably ever that I've watched completely sober.
I'm sorry.
I drank. No, it was great. I started drinking Woodford Double Oak at 2 o'clock on Saturday for a 3-year-old's birthday party, and didn't let up the rest of the day. So I remained sober Sunday evening when I watched the pay-per-view. Had a nice big glass of chocolate milk during the last match. You can let little man talk. He ain't heard nothing.
They're all going. I might have to dip out now. They're going crazy. Ospreay Danielson was great. AEW is great. Even when it's bad, it's good.
All I'm saying is you can watch a recap or you can watch a GIF. All
right, man.
Don't watch GIFs. Don't be like that.
Yeah. Don't get your pro wrestling through GIFs. You got any final thoughts on anything else we covered? I mean, I said I didn't actually have any notes for it, and but I did remember a lot of stuff. You got anything else from Raw that we need to get on?
Like I said, we get the establishment. This is all establishment show, setting us up for a bunch of different things. Be it, you know, the Jay versus Damian, which Damian has no personality, so it's not helping him being on the mic. Unfortunately, you get the breakup of Imperium, but not the full breakup
Kaiser.
Because Gunther approves.
Kaiser turned on Vinci. Yep.
And then you get the new women's champion in Becky, which that's either good or bad. It is what it is. She's a solid workhorse. Maybe she'll do what she did with the NXT belt and try to elevate some people with it and have them have some decent matches.
Yeah. All right. I think that'll probably wrap us up. Patrick's, you can see him in the background doing family things just for me and Steven. Yep. But let's get out of here for the night. It's been a fun one. If you don't already, please follow us on Instagram and Threads at Alabama Slam Pod, and follow our network of fellow podcasters at thealabamatake.com or The Alabama Take on pretty much all social media. And we'll talk to y'all again next week. Thanks.